Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And by this point in the week, maybe you've clicked on dozens of articles about Harvey Weinstein, articles which detailed his decade-long alleged and apparent rampage of sexual assault on women who worked with him or wanted to work with him or who were merely around him. The reports have been graphic, upsetting, in part because the details were so personal and specific. Victims recalled the moments of fear, locating themselves in their surroundings, looking for a door, a way out. These stories brought us into highly charged, traumatic, and deeply personal memories. They're once specific, but as so many people are pointing out, they are also achingly universal. This is an experience women have all too often to some degree at work. Everybody knows. According to a recent study by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, if you need some numbers on it, 4 in 10 women report enduring unwanted advances in a work environment, which could include a come-on, a gendered insult, sexual assault. So this morning, with Harvey Weinstein in mind, but a little to the side, we're going to invite some of your stories, but not a call-in for telling a story about your Harvey Weinstein per se, your harasser in the workplace, because in some way the news this week exposed once again that those encounters are sadly a sort of given, something that unfortunately occurs in our world all the time. We've done call-ins like that, and we've been really, really bad as a society in dealing with it. What I want to hear, which struck our ears as new this week and new to the women I work with, was the tenor of responses to the Harvey Weinstein allegations. There's a new ring of anger, of indignation, of camaraderie, and it has to do with speaking up and out and talking to one another and to others and saying, we're not going to take it anymore. Samantha Bee put it this way in her monologue the other night.
Listen up, creeps of Hollywood. We know who you are. Weinstein isn't the only cool Democrat lurking in film festival hotels waiting to play a jolly masturbation prank. Women talk to each other, and we talk to journalists, and we talk to lawyers. It's 2017. We don't have to put up with this shit. We are coming for you. Talk to every woman you work with like she has the New York Times on speed dial. Well, I guess it took the Times a little while to take care of business. Okay, talk to every woman like she has me on speed dial.
Samantha Bee talking about Harvey Weinstein, but not just about Harvey Weinstein, right? So we invite you to call in if something has changed for you this week. Are you someone who faces or has faced some sort of sexual harassment at work? And you've begun to think about your situation differently this week? Have you spoken up differently this week? Have you seen what's happening on Twitter? Call in 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You know, we had BuzzFeed writer Ann Helen Peterson on earlier this week who emphasized the importance of gossip or whisper networks between women, saying that when it's too scary to speak up to the powers that be, women speak to each other, warning one another and building a bad reputation for a harasser. Have you been talking to your girlfriends more? Have you been talking to other women in the office suddenly more after the Harvey Weinstein story? Or have you maybe even talked to the higher-ups differently this week? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Here's a real-life example. This week, inspired by the Harvey Weinstein allegation, Issa Hackett, a producer of Amazon's critically acclaimed series The Man in the High Castle, made public allegations that her boss, Roy Price, who's also the head of Amazon Studios, repeatedly made lewd comments to her despite her rebuffs. He was suspended. That's new. Maybe you didn't even hear that. That's just in the last half day. The head of Amazon Studios was put on a leave of absence. Hackett said she was inspired to speak publicly now because so many women had shared their stories about Weinstein. So have you been similarly inspired in any way? What's your action plan to deal with an interaction at work that's been maybe making you uncomfortable for a long time? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And it's also important to note, of course, that though this is another example that comes from show business, the Amazon one, harassment takes place in all fields of work. It cuts across all industries, all income levels, all races, ages, sexual orientations, political orientations, as Samantha Bee pointed out. You don't have to be dealing with high-profile people for your story to matter, for it to be life-defining. So what's your plan? How are you going to change, or have you already changed, is really our question, because of everything that's out there this week about Weinstein. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And I'll also remind you that in call-ins like this, you can be anonymous. We don't care what your name is. Make one up. We'll never make your information public. And you're free to talk here without fear of being exposed. You don't have to name any names. Just tell us your story and what's new for you now. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And as your calls are coming in, we are happy to have with us Jill Filipovich, lawyer and writer and author of The H-Spot, The Feminist Pursuit of Happiness. Jill, thank you so much for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me back.
So do you think this is a sea change of any kind, or is that too big?
I do think it's a sea change. I mean, I think what we see with Weinstein is one more example of how once these really powerful men start to fall, they seem to fall harder and faster. So Cosby, as we know, took several decades for the allegations to stick. Even somebody like Bill O'Reilly, you know, his sexual harassment allegations had been in the public for a while. And it wasn't until Roger Ailes went down that then O'Reilly came with him. And I think what we see with Weinstein is especially post-Trump, women and I think a lot of folks in media are really sick of men that seem to be able to harass women, behave badly, and not have any consequences. And I think with the rise of Donald Trump, the fact that he won the election despite so many allegations against him and being caught on tape bragging about sexual assault, I think there's sort of a newfound understanding that if we don't cut this stuff off at the knees, then it really grows, and these men can only get more powerful and leave a lot of damage in their wake.
Let's take a phone call. Jayshree in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jayshree.
Hi, Brian. So I'm calling in because this week the Met Brower opened a exhibition of the photographer Raghubir Singh. And through the Harvey Weinstein story, I was able to put together for myself that there were great parallels between what Raghubir did to me and what Harvey Weinstein did to a lot of other women. He got his assistant to buy me a plane ticket to India. He insisted on buying the plane ticket, which I was going to buy myself. And his assistant booked hotel rooms, and I found myself trapped for 2 weeks with him in India. I can't quite talk about those 2 weeks, but they were horrible. And when I got back to Brooklyn, the attention and the abuse continued for a year. It was very clear that I didn't want any of it. Every time I was encountering him, I took people along for protection. The encounters were very aggressive. There were fights that he would get into in my parents' home with people. He would come in with his star photographer friends, including Thomas Roma, who's the head of photography at Columbia, and they would tell us that us black photographers, there were no black photographers, there were only black athletes and black musicians. And this intimidation continued until he died, basically. And I'm in the middle of a massive PTSD episode. Yes. Because I keep flashing back to the parallels between what happened to me at the hands of Raghubir Singh, and I've spoken to various women. I came out on Facebook about it, and I've received support by various women, including women contacting me to tell me that they had similar experiences with him.
Jayashree, I hear the emotion in your voice. I do have to say, you know, to be fair, this is an allegation that we're getting against a prominent individual, even if a deceased individual, by a caller who we don't know, and we obviously can't verify it or vouch for it. But Jill Filipovich, you're an attorney. How can you help Jayashree, either because you've dealt with women in this situation, you know, many times, to deal with the PTSD that she said she's feeling right now, but also what can she or what can other people do if they're experiencing just this kind of feeling coming up, even regarding an incident that happened, or in her case, she says, repeated incidents that happened a long time ago, as they're triggered by the Harvey Weinstein stories?
Sure. So let me preface this by saying that this is not legal advice. I'm no one's lawyer, not a caller's, and not anyone who's listening, and I'm not practicing law right now, and this was not my area of practice. So with that said, I think one of the most important things that women can do is find a space where they feel like they can talk about what happened to them, and they will be listened to and affirmed. That might look a lot of different ways. That might just be your best friend. It might be your therapist. It might be a post on Facebook. It might be going public, like lots of incredibly brave women have done. I've been sexually harassed at work, too, and I have not had the bravery to come forward and talk about it. So I just want to say that I have the utmost respect for women who are able to come and speak out. For women that are experiencing this, you know, in real time or among prominent men who perhaps are still able to answer for it, I mean, my best advice is that if you want to pursue any kind of legal action, you've got to retain a lawyer. It's unfortunately, it can be a very hard road to go. And so if you are going the direction of trying to hold someone accountable, obviously set up a team that's going to be in your corner. That includes, you know, a legal representative. It includes friends who will tell you that you're not crazy and who will bring over a cup of tea or a bottle of wine when you need it. It, you know, hopefully includes your family if that relationship is there. But build those deep networks. You know, unfortunately, the reality is that women who come forward about these things face incredible scrutiny. There's a reason so many of us stay quiet. And so the better you can build up a team behind you, the safer you're going to feel and the saner you're going to stay. Because this can, you know, frankly, be incredibly undermining and sort of crazy making for anyone who has the bravery to come forward and talk about it.
So Jayashree, is that helpful to you? And do you have that kind of network around you to help you through this PTSD-like experience that you described?
Very much so. In fact, one of the women who came forward to share her story about the same person herself is a healer. And I have access to an entire community, supportive community, who are hearing me. And to be able to come on the radio and say it is incredibly helpful, because this is a very powerful man and he's dead and there's a lot of money behind his career and there's going to be nothing I can do about it. But I can make it public who he is so that they know that they're consuming a predator's work as they consume it.
And again, we have to say that this is an allegation. We have no evidence one way or another. But Jayashree, if it helps that you got it out, I'm glad. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And my guest is Jill Filipovich, attorney and author of The H-Spot, The Feminist Pursuit of Happiness. Let's go back a little bit. In a recent article you wrote, you said that sexual harassment entered the mainstream lexicon in 1991, the term sexual harassment, during that infamous Senate confirmation hearing for Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, when Anita Hill testified about his alleged sexual advances and pornographic commentary. How did that moment change the way people talked about workplace harassment?
I think what was really interesting about that moment is how differently a lot of women seemed to view it than a lot of men. So you had this visual of Anita Hill, who's an attorney, who's, you know, this incredibly composed, intelligent woman sitting in front of the U.S. Senate, doing what she believes is her civic duty and testifying about a man who might be confirmed to be a Supreme Court justice. You know, and you have this group of mostly white old men who, you know, are sort of staring down their noses at her, who are incredibly condescending, and, you know, who are treating her really, really poorly for, you know, just doing what she believed was what I think many of us in hindsight see was the right thing. And that, I think, really shifted view of sexual harassment from just kind of a boys will be boys, this is what women in the workplace have to bear if we go into male environments, to something that women were finally able to put a name on. Like, oh, you know, my boss treats me differently than he treats my colleague Harold, and it's because I'm female and it's sexualized. That's huge. And I think Anita Hill and just the sort of nationalizing of the discourse around sexual harassment totally shifted the way that we talk about women and men and the workplace for the better.
And you're right, it's no coincidence that harassment and even assault were pushed undercover at the same time more and more women entered previously male-dominated fields, rose to prominence, and gained power in their own right. With more women in the room and a few at the top, male workplace norms began to crack. So can you talk about that paradox, that feminist gains have somehow made workplace harassment more tenable in some ways and rocking the boat more difficult?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, if you put getting women into male-dominated environments, I think is a good thing. And I think most people at this point would say that's a good thing. But it also meant that, you know, especially at this point, we sort of hear that feminism's work is done, that the playing field is equal, that more women are graduating from college than men, that women are doing so well. And so if women today, I think, do experience sexual harassment at work or being treated differently than their male colleagues, it can be really jarring. And because we hear that things are fair, I think a lot of women's first reaction is, well, it must be me. I must have done something wrong. I was stupid for putting myself in that position. You know, it's not systematic, or it's not him. And, you know, I really think that the only way you fix that is you get a large enough number of women, not only in the room, but at the top, where these norms can no longer thrive or can't exist. Michelle Goldberg has a really interesting piece in the New York Times today where she cites some research that I believe says that the more women you kind of get in leadership roles, the sort of less the gap is between men and women in the workplace, the fewer incidents of sexual harassment you see.
Right.
Which makes sense, right? You have sort of fewer and Michelle, potential harassers.
By the way, Michelle's scheduled to be guest on the show on Tuesday. Just saying for people who may not have even known Michelle Goldberg's previous work for Slate and elsewhere until she became a New York Times columnist just the other week. She'll be here on Tuesday's show. But I'm sorry, Jill, go ahead.
No, she's brilliant, so I'm glad you're having her on. But there has been, I think, this paradox where we do hear that things are now fair. And so when things strike us as sexualized or fundamentally unfair in a gendered way, it can be easy to take that on as kind of an individual problem and not even be able to identify the fact that, you know, the entire ship has an issue and that this whole boat needs rocking.
Let's take another call. Cassandra in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Cassandra.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
I was listening to your segment the other day with Anne Helen Peterson, and the word endurance has been stuck in my head ever since she mentioned it. I've definitely been enduring just day-to-day interactions of sexual harassment and things like that. I'm a young female, and whether it's in the workplace or just walking down the street, I definitely experience it. So because of her segment, I've kind of come to the conclusion that I need to change my ways and gain some strength, and I was looking for advice.
Jill, any advice for Cassandra?
I mean, that's a tough one, because the reality is, for young women, you know, we move through the world and it is this kind of constant just cacophony of voices, of men talking to us on the street, of getting harassed at work. You know, I sort of wonder if men had to walk through the world in a woman's skin for a day, if they'd be able to take it. You know, I think for a lot of women, there is this assumption that we just need to be stronger. If we do something better, then maybe this stuff will stop. I unfortunately don't think that's the case. I think these are collective social problems. And if we're looking for solutions, I don't think they're going to necessarily come at an individual level. I think they're going to be more collective. So, you know, I would say focusing on things like working with an anti-street harassment campaign, or seeing what they say are kind of best practices for dealing with men who harass you on the street or are out of line at work. Partnering with other women, not only to engage in these kind of whisper campaigns about who's a problem and who's not, you know, but also pushing for things like the easier ability to file, for example, class action suits, which the Supreme Court gutted a couple years ago in a massive class action sexual harassment suit focused on Walmart, or sex discrimination suit, excuse me. You know, that really undermines women's ability to seek legal remedies for the kinds of problems that you're talking about. So, of course, you know, focus on how can I move through the world as unaccosted as possible? How can I, you know, center myself or talk back to harassers or whatever it is? But I wouldn't sort of push aside the potential and the necessity of feminist activism as well, and looking into various channels where you can put this energy and rage and frustration in tandem with other women and see if we can make some real changes.
So you write about an acceleration effect from Cosby to Trump to Ailes to O'Reilly. You write, each of these high-profile cases echoes the last and accelerates the next. Toppling the first few titans was a heavy lift, and while it's still not easy, each successive predator seems to fall that much faster. Do you think the Weinstein allegations could lead to an increase of complaints and a decrease in harassment?
I hope so. You know, I think one of the challenges that we're facing right now is that, obviously, all of these high-profile cases have involved high-profile men. I'm sure that at every newspaper in the country right now, at an editorial meeting, there's an editor saying, "Find me the next Weinstein," and reporters, you know, are scouring their industries to figure out, you know, what other powerful and influential and famous men are doing this, and who will go on the record and talk about it. I think that's good. I think that it sets, or it at least shifts, kind of broader cultural norms. I think the challenge comes in the fact that the vast majority of women don't work for famous and powerful men. The vast majority of women who are harassed at work, you know, they work for Jim in IT, right? You know, or middle manager Paul, who, no matter what he does, is never going to be on the front page of the New York Times. So I'm hopeful that because this does shift the conversation and because it does put people on alert, it will make, you know, the men and women who run companies and HR departments more wary that there could be serious consequences to not dealing with harassment complaints. But I do worry that the hyper-focus on the most powerful means that, you know, yet again, the women that have the least power in society won't hear their complaints heard.
And so, to your point, that most women who face harassment don't work for some boldface name, but rather work for Jim in IT or something. Stacy in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Stacy, thank you so much for calling.
Hi, thank you, Brian. I actually am an example of exactly what you're talking about. And it's not high profile. It was when I was about 10 years ago. And this week, with the you know, Weinstein allegations coming out, I'm feeling inspired to want to talk about it and make it public. And I felt for a long time that nobody would believe me. At the time, I was a teacher in a master's program, and I was set up with a mentor who was also through the master's program, and he was my mentor, a teacher in the school I was teaching at. And he was sexually harassing me, and I never told anybody because I didn't think anybody was going to believe me. And it would happen in the classroom even. I'd be facing the class, and he would be mentoring me, facing me, so his back would be to the kids. And he'd be saying, when are we going to have sex? And also, my mother passed away that same year. And I was going through so much. I didn't think anybody would believe me if I said something. Mm-hmm. I was just going through too much. And it really did hurt me. And since then, I have thought to myself, how many other people has he done that to? And I want to make it public. It was a long time ago, so I don't know exactly how to do it. But I know he still teaches. And it's wrong. And I do want to say thank you for letting me come on the show to say this story, because it makes me feel like I have a voice. And it makes me feel like at least I can start by saying something, you know, out loud. And hopefully figure out how to make it public so that, you know, if he is still teaching, which I think he is.
That other women somehow, who he's mentoring, aren't at risk today.
Sorry, I didn't hear.
I'm sorry, I was just kind of echoing back what you were saying, that you hope that if he is still teaching, that this kind of thing may not, that you want to help make sure it doesn't happen again to women who he may be mentoring today who might be at risk.
Absolutely. I'm not sure. I don't think he's still with that same master's program. Uh-huh. I think he's somewhere else now, but I think he's still teaching. And so if he did that to me as a teacher, I hope he doesn't do it. I don't know who else he does it to, but it was, you know, I felt like the effect it had on me was that even though I knew it was wrong, I didn't believe it was my fault. But at the same time, he silenced me because I knew that everybody admired him so much for his skills as a teacher. Mm-hmm. The kids loved him. The school loved him. He was sort of, you know, put on a pedestal. And I was new, and I was feeling like I questioned my own abilities as a teacher. And, you know, I wasn't completely confident. I was still learning. And I just didn't, I didn't trust that if I said something, people would believe me. And I think it was also because I was going through a lot of other things too.
And you're exactly why we're doing this segment in this way today. And Jill, and my guest is Jill Filipovich, attorney, author of The H Spot, The Feminist Pursuit of Happiness, her article in Time Magazine, this week called Harvey Weinstein and What Happens Next. And we had seen stories like yours, Stacey, all over Twitter this week. People who were, because of the Harvey Weinstein allegations surfacing in the way they did, even if not knowing exactly what to do, like you don't, were inspired to try to bring something that happened in the past or might be happening now that they haven't had the context or the power institutionally or whatever to say. More people want to say it right now because of what's being surfaced with Harvey Weinstein, and blow the whistle on people right now about things that are happening now or happened in the past. Jill, what advice would you give to Stacey?
Well, I would say one great resource is the National Women's Law Center. They, I know, are expanding their work around workplace discrimination and harassment. And so they're good folks to just check out their website, see what advice they give, and potentially contact them. I mean, you know, I hate to say contact a lawyer first, because lawyers are expensive and tend to be fairly conservative about, you know, what they sort of foresee as possible. But it may not be a bad idea, especially if you're considering, you know, talking about a private citizen in a way that could impact his career. What you don't want is to start talking about this stuff and, you know, report him to his employer and then have him turn around and say, sue you for defamation or libel. So I would talk to a lawyer. I would try the National Women's Law Center.
Yeah, because he also, I know that he had, I mean, you know, he used to act like he had a lot of money. I don't know if he had a lot of money, I guess he probably must have. He drove around a fancy car, and you know, so I don't know. That's the thing, is that you know, you don't know how it's going to come back and hit you, you know. And but I also want to say that every woman and the celebrities, the way they came out, it's so powerful. And hearing Samantha Bee talk about it, every single woman that has done that is making it a little bit easier, you know, to clear the path for others to follow. You know, at least I do have, I know to be careful and probably, you know, I don't want to have backlash, so probably talk to a lawyer first if I was going to take those steps. But, you know, it's very scary because it's like, how do you, you know, it's my word against his, you know, and, you know, what do you, at the same time, why would I make this up, you know?
Right. Right. Like, you don't have a lot to gain.
All these years later.
You know, and again, this is, yeah. This is not legal advice, and please, you know, don't take it as such. You know, but certainly, you know, in situations like this, it is not unheard of for women to write anonymous letters to somebody's, you know, new employer and just say, look, like, I'm flagging this as an issue, you know, or arrange for a meeting, and not with the person that you're talking about, but, you know, perhaps with an administrator or an HR department or, you know, somebody that would be the kind of appropriate person to flag this for.
Stacey, thank you so much for calling and having the courage to go public with it right now and at least get it out. I'm glad you felt it, that it was empowering for you to do it on the air here. And Merrill in Port Washington, you're on WNYC. Hello, Merrill.
Hi. So I come from this from a completely different standpoint in that I have a 16-year-old daughter who is just beginning her life, as I call it. And when I saw things about Cosby or Roger Ailes or O'Reilly, and I would say something to her, she'd be like, I don't know who those people are. I don't really care. But when you see somebody like Harvey Weinstein, all of a sudden that is a story she can understand and wants more information on because it involves Hollywood and actresses, TV, you know, movies. And she's willing to listen to me tell her just simple things. It's not like, oh, she always says, Mom, you're just worried about me. You're worrying too much. But there's such a bigger picture here. And being older, you know, you have a little bit more experience. We've all been through something. Probably every mom can tell a story to their child, but they're not interested in my story. I'm just a boring mom. But the story of somebody this important, you know, to come down to them to, so that I can talk to her about this, although she doesn't need to hear my stories. I've had conversations with her already about going out to parties and not leaving your, if you even have a soda, don't leave it there. Take it with you or get a new soda. Don't let anyone hand you anything. She thinks I'm nuts. So
I'm just curious. I'm just curious, Merrill. The stories about Ailes and Cosby didn't have an effect. You're saying this one did. What about the story of the president or at that time the presidential candidate?
No,
the
nothing.
Access Hollywood tape.
Nothing. Nothing, because she didn't watch The Apprentice. She didn't even really know who Donald Trump was. And she doesn't really even know who Harvey Weinstein was, but she knows movies and she knows television.
Right.
And so that makes a difference to her. So bringing down somebody like that maybe allows me to have a conversation with her now before she goes to college.
Really? Which is really important before she goes into that environment. Absolutely.
Yes.
Merrill, thank you so much for your call. That's another really, you know, revealing story. So, Jill Filipovich, before you go, your article in Time is called Harvey Weinstein and What Happens Next. What happens next?
I hope what happens next is that women take this as an opportunity to start speaking out, not just in these whisper networks, but reporting their bosses. You know, is somebody high profile calling up a journalist? And really banding together, you know, it's, I think what these stories show is that there's real strength in numbers. It's always scary to be the one person out there by yourself. You know, but when women, as Jennifer Senior, who's a Times writer, put it, you know, when they hold hands and jump together, there's some strength there. And I think that's something that women sort of at all levels of employment and in all corners of society can do to start making things better.
Jill, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jill Filipovich, lawyer and writer and author of The H-Spot, The Feminist Pursuit of Happiness.